Welcome to Martially Motivated. I am your host, Dan Burrell of Burrell Martial Arts. Today I talk about recognizing a threat as well as profiling a victim, profiling a predator, pre-incident indicators, basically a lot of stuff to keep you safe, prevention mindset from one of my handbooks that I give out at self-defense seminars. Kind of similar to what I talked about last time. I got it from the same handbook here with my vehicle security, but we're talking about more personal security this time. And then I wrap it up with a story or two at the end. It's not as lighthearted as some of the ones I've done. It is more serious on this podcast. I will get more lighthearted ones in the future, but I do want to get some good information out for people. I feel it's necessary, and again, as I talk about at the end of the podcast, that it's unfortunate how few actually seek out some of this knowledge, and it's crucial, and it's not that hard to learn as far as just being aware. Physical self-defense is difficult, but awareness and prevention is pretty quick. I can teach it to you in one seminar. A couple hours, we're good, if that. So listen through it. Hopefully you take something from it, and hopefully you pass it on to somebody. We have not only the podcast with information. Recently, due to the shutdowns of COVID-19, I have moved all of my material, physical material to online as well. So hopefully you or anybody you know that would want to sign up will do so. I have sign up enrollment forms on my website. I'll have it on my Facebook page and a lot of other stuff. I've mass emailed everybody, but at the same time, very few people actually look at their email anymore for some reason. So unfortunately, I don't get the word out very well. It's very hard to do. So again, if you're listening and you want to do online courses versus just sitting at home doing nothing, check it out. I'll get caught up with you and tell you how to do it. It's pretty simple. I do not have the Hub Keto stuff up there because I need a partner and I don't have anybody here. Unfortunately, it's just myself. And so I do have the Taekwondo, the Gumdo courses online that you can check out. But as far as the episode today, prevention, mindset, awareness, that's what we're focused on. We get into some deep conversations there for a moment. And again, it's not all lighthearted, which I normally like to put in there, but some things are just rough, and you'll find out when you listen. So I hope you learned something and you still enjoy it. Today I'm going to be talking about recognizing threats and a few extra notes as far as profiling victims and predators, some pins, pre-incident indicators too. Some of this stuff, specifically the pins that we're going to be talking about, come from The Gift of Fear. I think in my notes here, I directly took them that I'm going to be talking about from there. Probably the order and everything. If you've not read that book, I've mentioned it in the last one, last podcast. You'll hear me say it again. It is a great book. I'm undoubtedly going to be mentioning things from this book. So pins came from that one. There's going to be one that when we talk about profiling a predator, this one I got off of a website, the www.crime-safety-security.com. That's what I have listed here. It's been quite a few years since I looked at it. Maybe it's changed now. The information though is pretty good. There's some percentages in there, but we'll get into that. Anytime something comes to percentages, you got to be a little careful with it. Usually they're correct, but let's get into that first. Statistics. There are a lot of statistics out there, and some of them are extremely scary. Things like 1 in 3 women will be abused sometime in their lifetime. I think that is similar to in statistics. I'm not sure if it's 1 in 3 or 1 in 5, whatever it may be. It's a shocking number. But there's things to think about when it comes to this. Where did this number come from, and what do they mean by abuse and all this stuff? So there is, if you look at the percentages of you know, women that get abused in, let's say, New York City. That is going to be different than where I grew up, in middle of nowhere, Norfolk, Nebraska. Kind of a little bit bigger town for Nebraska, but still, it's a pretty small town. The crime isn't the same. And so that percentage is not going to be the same in Nebraska as it is in New York. New York is going to be higher, whereas Nebraska is going to be lower. Therefore, that percentage works out, it's kind of an average of the, it may be the nation, it could be the world. It kind of depends on where you're getting that information. So you got to be careful about these statistics. They do change from time to time. Over the years, they're going to change, and then even from place to place. And your hobbies and your lifestyle is all going to change those things. I wish I had the book with me. There's another book out there that I recommend. I think it's called How Not to Get Hit. It's that's why I picked it up. I love stuff like that. Prevention mindset awareness is fantastic, because as I mentioned in the previous podcast, you can avoid a vast majority of altercations if you just know what to look for. And I believe in that book, they talk about your percentages of if you're in a certain age group. Basically, it came down to if you're a 21-year-old college student that likes to go to bars every weekend, you're at a much higher percentage of being in an altercation than a 75-year-old grandmother who knits at home. It's obvious, but we're all being applied to the same statistics. So think about that. When I give you some of these statistics, you have to take into account a lot of things going on here. These are averages, and you can manipulate these averages on your lifestyle and know-how. If you understand some of the things I'm talking about here and what to look for, you can drop these percentages massively. So let's start off or go into next. That was what we started with. So recognizing a threat. There are a few things. When I go through women's self-defense, we talk about this first. This kind of sets up some of my initial physical defenses and altercations. And this one talks about fertile hunting grounds. And we discuss this. I go down a list. I say parking garage, university campus, shopping mall, grocery store. And I ask if there's something strange about this. When we call them fertile hunting grounds, why would it be a grocery store? And that's usually one of the things they bring up. Like, there's a lot of people there. No one's going to get attacked in the middle of the grocery store. And they're correct. They will not get attacked there. Unlikely. It's where they're spotted. So predators will establish a spot in these hunting grounds where they can spot a lot of people at once, potentially. If it's a grocery store, it may be just walking through the aisles and trying to spot certain types of people, which we're going to talk about in a moment. They'll follow you to see if you're going to be an easy target. And you're going to hear me say this a lot. If you are set up to be an easy target, you show that you're going to be an easy target, you're the most likely to be targeted. People like this don't want the easy way, or don't want the hard way out. If they did, they'd do a lot of other things. As far as, you're going to find out some of these people are thieves, they're looking to get something for you. And a thief doesn't want to work for their money or their objects, whatever it is. They want the quickest route there. So if you fight back, or in this case, just look like you're going to fight back, they will avoid you. So keep that in mind when it comes to being a target, and we will talk a little bit more about that as far as profiling a victim. So they're following you to kind of ascertain whether or not you're going to be a target that they want to deal with. They'll look around for witnesses, find low visibility areas to attack. All right, and that could be waiting for you to go into a different place. That could be taking you to a different place. Let's say they spotted you in that grocery store. Maybe they're going to wait for you to walk back to your car, and maybe your car is in a low light area, or maybe they're just going to follow you in their car until they get to your home. You never know. But they're not going to attack you in that large open area where a lot of people are. Now, moving on, there is couple other things that I want to talk about with these pins, pre-incident indicators. And again, if you want more in-depth on this with a great book, the Gift of Fear is the way to go. You'll hear me reference a lot of great books throughout these podcasts. There's just so many good ones out there. With these pins, P-I-N-S, pre-incident indicators is what that stands for. I'm going to go down the list first, and we'll talk about these. Forced teaming, loan sharking, too many details, unsolicited promises, typecasting, discounting the word no, and the interview. So let's start with forced teaming. Things people say that they put you and them together. Instead of saying, I feel like this, or yeah, I feel the same way, they'll say, oh yeah, we're dealing with a lot right now, aren't we? Or we're in the same boat with this scenario. That's what they mean by forced teaming. They're trying to lump you two together versus individuals that will put you on their side. That therefore, if they try and argue with you, they're arguing with themselves is what that kind of comes down to. It's a little psychology going on there. Loan sharking, they're going to help you out so that you feel in their debt. And by the way, I'm going to tell you a story after I get done with these that you'll go back to these pins and go, oh, there's that pin. There's another pin. Oh, there's another one. So look forward to that one there. The next one here is too many details. Unnecessary explanations to explain oneself or situation. I know this one well because I work with kids. It's their first way of lying is to give you way too many details, and I know instantly that they are not telling me the truth. Luckily for me, I have security cameras all around my studio, and I just point to the camera and say, is that what the camera's going to say? And instantly they have a different tone and a different long list of details to try and explain how it's an accident now rather than the fact that they didn't do it. But too many details is a quick way of knowing if somebody's lying. Generally speaking, sometimes they just know a lot about what they're talking about, such as myself, hopefully. Unsolicited promises. Promises are used to convince us of an intention. I promise I'm not going to, you know, abduct you and take you home. It could be a joke, but nonetheless, why do you need to say something like that? Unless it's part of that conversation, but they'll say these things that they don't need to be promised. A lot of the stuff, as far as I'm not going to abduct you, well, duh, I would hope not, so it doesn't need to be said. Typecasting. A man will label a woman in a critical way to get her to approve otherwise, or vice versa. But I've seen this one quite a bit as I've been out, let's say downtown at a club or a bar. A guy going to a woman, and usually it's nothing sinister. It's just a more of a pickup line type of thing. Like, wow, you're way too attractive for me. But I'd love to just get to know you to make my life nicer for the evening. I've been having a tough night and talking to this amazingly attractive woman that's way out of my league would thrill me tonight. Can I get to know you? Something like that. I've heard so many different variations of that. And they go, oh, no, that's not me. I'm just a normal person, or I'm not stuck up. That's another one. You're probably way too uppity for me, so I get it, so I'm just going to move on. And wait, I'm not uppity. Usually it's something negative, not always. Like that first one I gave you was something positive, and that's usually how you can tell the difference between someone that is really just trying to be nice and get to know you, and not get rejected right away, and somebody that is trying to manipulate you. They'll point you out as something negative to try and get you to prove otherwise, and the more you talk to them, the higher their chances are. So it's very important to recognize some of these pre-incident indicators early on so you can stop this before it gets going too far. The next one here, discounting the word no. No is a word that should never be negotiated. Plain and simple. I have issues with this one. It actually led to me getting fired once because I refused to negotiate the word no. I was told I need to be a salesperson, which I was not. I'm a personal trainer and a martial arts instructor, and at the gym, new people came in, and I was told I need to sell. And I am not a salesman. I am a horrible salesman. And I said, I'll do what I can, but there's certain things that I will not do that I know a salesman is supposed to do. And one of the ones that kept coming up is the word no. I said, when somebody says no, I'm going to say, okay, thank you for your time. Here's my business card and move on. And they say, no, you can get money from everybody. You've got to know how to do it. And I said, no, that is a moral and a value that I will not break. If someone says no, it's no. End of story. I realize this is not about self-defense here, but if we say it here and we negotiate the word no in business and in sales, then how is that any different than when we're trying to sell ourselves to the opposite sex? So I do not negotiate the word no, and that's just a bottom line. Unfortunately, they did not like that answer, and I am no longer working for them. To each their own, I get it. I didn't fit their employee status of what they wanted, and I'm fine with that. I hope they're fine with that, and we moved on. So I discounting the word no, you can't do it. When someone says no and you have to try and explain why your answer is no repeatedly, that is an issue. Moving on, the interview. Asking many questions to determine information to use against you. This too, like we mentioned a couple of statements ago with the typecasting, if they're constantly asking you questions, we need to end this immediately because they're trying to dig up dirt on you. Sorry to say, but that's how psychics work. That they ask you a lot of questions and a lot of open-ended questions, and you tend to fill in the gaps. Sorry if you believe in psychics, maybe they exist. I've just never seen an honest one, but that's up to you. That's up to them. I could be wrong, but I do know the con men's and con women's of the world, that's how they get their information that blow your mind. You give it to them. And that's exactly what this interview is when we reference the interview on this pre-incident indicators. So those are your pre-incident indicators. I want to go into profiling a victim and profiling a predator. Then I want to finish with a story for you, some story time. So this probably won't be in a super long podcast, but we've got a lot of information here. I may ramble on like I do in class. So with profiling a victim, there's essentially three types of victims out there. You have the passive, the meek and quiet. You have the defensive, which is most people, and I'll go in more in depth on these in a moment. And then you have people with high self-esteem, confidence, and experience. They will get in your face if they think you're a threat. These people are rarely threatened. Because, as we mentioned before, most people that are trying to take advantage of you somehow, whether it's a thief trying to steal from you, someone trying to hurt you, someone trying to get something, maybe the promotion before you, whatever it may be, they tend to stand down when you're confrontational. And you get confrontational when you have high self-esteem, high confidence, and a high amount of experience in this situation. Hence the reason we train so heavily in martial arts. If you know that you can physically handle yourself, it makes it so much easier to mentally handle a situation. So that person is rarely threatened. They just show and kind of exude that confidence and the I will not be messed with type of attitude. Sometimes those people are also very cocky and rude. There is a fine line. I like to think I'm pretty confident when it comes to this stuff, but I'm not a very confrontational person. I just know that if something goes down, I can defend myself, but you're not important enough for me to even deal with majority of the time if you're in my face. So That is confrontational and high self-esteem. The defensive person that we have listed here, they don't typically want to fight back. They're not combative. They're not verbally or physically in your face, but they will defend themselves and protect their family if they're pushed far enough. They can be a target, but when they're attacked, if they're attacked, and when they start fighting back, the attacker tends to back down and run away. So they will defend themselves. They just don't want to. The passive, the meek, the quiet, the shy, they hold their heads down. These, unfortunately, are the ideal target. And a lot of times this person is spotted from a mile away. Their head is down. They'll step out of the way if someone's coming. Those types of things that, yes, a lot of people do this because they're trying to be nice. I do the same thing. If I'm going up stairs and there's two people, one coming down, me going up, yeah, I'm going to step aside just because it doesn't affect me whatsoever. But if they're going to be up in my face, that's a little different. So there's a difference between being nice and however you want to call it, but being nice towards somebody, being courteous towards others, that is not being passive. The passive that we're talking about here is more of an attitude in the way you carry yourself. You can be very confrontational and still be nice and courteous, but the passive type just exude, I will not stand up for myself. And again, they are who's targeted. And it's not just personally, it's not just physically like being attacked or something taken from you. It can also be professionally. One of the scenarios that I talk about in my self-defense classes, when it comes to professionally, because a lot of people tend to forget about their profession when it comes to this, it's the same thing. You can be attacked physically, you can be attacked through someone stealing something from you. You can also be attacked on a professional level. And it's good to recognize this. The scenario I give is, let's say your coworker comes up to you and is in a rush and like, oh my God, I just got a call from the hospital. My son's in the hospital. He's sick or injured, whatever it may be. I need to get over there. I need to take off a little early, but I have this big report due and I don't want to get fired. Can you do it? Just finish up that last part of it. You'd be a lifesaver for me. Now, would you do it? That's the question I asked to my participants in the self-defense classes. And most people say, yeah, of course. And I say, yeah, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with helping somebody, but it's how you go about helping them that's important. If you just say yes, no problem, and then do it, guess where they're going to go the next time an issue comes up? They're going to come right back to you, even if it's a lesser issue. Maybe they have a headache. Man, that migraine, it's kicking in now. Man, Dan said yes that last time. I'm going to go to him again. He's such a good guy. He can finish this report again for me, and I can go home and rest. And what do you say this time? If you say no, suddenly you're a jerk. If you say yes, they're going to keep coming back. And next thing you know, if you keep saying yes, they are getting promotions and not being at work as much, and you're working extra and getting demoted because your own work is not getting done. You're doing their work instead. And that is how you get attacked professionally. So you have to look at this and go, where did this start? Do I say no and be the jerk right off the bat? No, you don't have to. You can, but it's probably not good for people liking you where you work, and then they're going to attack you in a different way. So you have to put a line there. You have to draw that line in the sand. Say, yeah, absolutely, I'll take care of this time. But it's just this one time. I can't do it anymore. I've got a lot of work to do, but I completely understand this one scenario. Right there, put yourself in the person that needs to leave and go see their kid. You're thinking, excellent, they're helping me here. That's great, but I will never ask them to do this again. That they did a lot for me here. I'm not going to take advantage of that. They had a very clear statement of, I'll only do this once. You're not a jerk. You set boundaries, and you helped out your fellow employee. That's a win-win all around. Yeah, you got some extra work, but they're going to love you for it, and they'll never come back to you again in that scenario. If they do, you can say and refer back to this first time and say, I did it that one time. I can't do it this time, and they'll understand. So that is how you can deal with this and be nice and courteous and still not have someone take advantage of you. All right, now, moving on to profiling a predator. As we talked about at the start of this, I got this from a website a number of years ago. It may have changed, so don't worry. Most of these percentages are not the important part of it, but I do think they're probably pretty close, if not exactly correct. But they talk about thieves, robbers, carjackers, and rapists, and different types of rapists. So I want to talk about the thieves first here. They have what they have listed here, and I would agree with really all of this stuff, but many are drug addicts or alcoholics, have little to no contact with victim, don't tend to like conflict, and will run when noticed. They just want to get your stuff and get out. And there's a couple of these that say are drug addicts, or many of them are. And it is true, because it is financially destructive to have an addiction. So they need to find ways to fill that addiction and feed that addiction. Hence the reason that's why they're stealing. That they just want to fill that addiction. They want to feed that. That's it. They don't really want to hurt you, or they may not want to do what they're about to do, but they need it. The addiction is really driving them. That's why a lot of them will do it. That doesn't mean all of them are. As we talked about in the last podcast with car safety, sometimes it's a crime of opportunity. If you have a wallet full of money that's just dangling out the back of your pocket, a lot of people may reach out and grab that. People that were not expecting to do anything, they wouldn't necessarily consider themselves a thief or a thief, but maybe they're having a bad day and they've got bills, and they go, there's a quick way, and this person clearly has a lot of money and doesn't care. They're not trying to secure it or anything, so they may not even miss this. So they take it. That would be the scenario where it's not about drugs. It's just you're offering it up practically. So you got to be careful. Don't flaunt these types of things. And chances are it won't get stolen, but not always the case. So that is the thief or the thieves. Robbers and carjackers. Many are drug addicts. The difference between these two is the robber or the carjacker will use or threaten violence. They'll do it to ideally just get what they want, to induce or trick you into willfully giving over what they want. They will jump in front of you, be noticed, and induce violence if necessary, or at least act like they will. That could be them jumping out with a gun, a knife, any other weapon, and saying, give me all your money, or give me that necklace, whatever it may be. When it comes to that scenario, give it to them. It's easy. It's not worth your life. And even if you know what you're doing, and someone jumps out and has a knife or a gun pointed at me and says, give me your wallet, even for myself, I'm going to give it over. It's not worth my life. I know what I'm doing, but a weapon changes things dramatically, and you can't mess around with that. As I have said to anybody that's ever taken a class where I taught any type of knife defense, my first rule is don't get into a knife fight. Because of the second rule, you're going to get cut in a knife fight. End of story. You're going to get cut. All I can really do to teach you is to limit where you get cut. Protect the vital areas the best you can, so that if you get cut, it's in a non-vital area and you can get to a hospital within time, because you're going to get cut. That's just the way it is. Same thing with that gun. Chances are you're going to get shot. I like to point out that if somebody is showing you the weapon, that usually means they don't want to use it. But at the same time, that doesn't mean they're not going to. Just because they don't want to doesn't mean they're not going to. So you got to be careful with that. Just don't take the chance. All right. So that is robbers, carjackers. And then they usually leave when you give them what they want. As long as you are not what they want, if it's money or an object, give it to them. But do not give yourself to them. That is the one time I would say if a robber or a carjacker comes up to you with a weapon or anything and says, get in the van, fight back, run, do whatever it takes. Because that is the one scenario that I tell people 100% of the time, you need to do something about this, because almost 100% of the time you will not be found. You're being taken somewhere to be murdered, basically. So don't get into that van. So on to the next one, the scariest ones, the roughest ones, rapists will most likely use violence or threats of violence to attempt their sexual acts. About 85% of rapists are acquaintances, and only about 15% are strangers. That's a rough statistic, very difficult statistic. That, again, I agree with this number, and it's alarming, but it is true. They break this down into a few different, four technically different types of rapist. Going down the list, this one's going to sound really strange, but it's called a gentleman rapist. I don't know anybody that's a gentleman while they're being a rapist, but it is the name of that category. It is 70% of all rapists, and as mentioned before, they're usually acquaintances. Think women play hard to get and don't usually really mean no. They mostly use verbal threats and just enough physical force to succeed. That is the most likely scenario. And again, that goes back to they don't think you mean no. It's unfortunate. We need to change that trend. I don't know about the rest of the world, but you see it here. You see it in movies. Watch any teen movie, romantic rom-com. They almost always start off with the female character that the guy who is nowhere near her league is trying to obtain. She says no, and he spends the whole rest of the movie trying to turn that no to a yes, and then finally succeeds in the end. That is a stalker story. I don't know why these movies keep getting made, but they do, and people love them, and they teach people that it's okay to ignore the word no, and it is not, because that is not the way it works out in reality. And unfortunately, we force it to. Not only does it teach boys and men that we should keep fighting for it and then be persistent. Don't take no for an answer, but it also teaches women to play hard to get, which I've never come across that woman, so I don't know if that side's working or not, but then again, I always accept the word no, so maybe that's why I'm single. But anyway, that is the gentleman rapist, 70%. Control freak rapist, 25% of all rapists feel an entitlement to dominate women. I don't know why. I don't get where that comes from. I'm sure there's a psychologist out there that understands it and can tell you more about this, but control freak, I understand the control freak side of it. I've met quite a few of them. If I'm in class or teaching, I am the control freak. I want things done my way, but beyond that, I don't care. It is what it is. But again, they feel entitled. I'm guessing they grew up this way. It was in their household, and that's just the way they feel it needs to be. Revenge rapist, 3 to 5% of all rapists, and are usually strangers. That's one of the smaller groups that are strangers. May be impotent during attack and will use physical abuse and humiliation, seeking discharge of anger rather than sexual pleasure. So it's more about the violence of it and hurting you or hurting the victim more so than sexual pleasure. Sadistic rapist, 1-3% of all rapists, and are usually strangers again. So notice that the two smallest percentages are strangers. The other two, not so much. They enjoy the anguish and torment of the victim, maybe done in a ritualistic way. Whether it's like a cult mindset or whatever it may be, that's what they're talking about there. So those are profiling predators. That's basically all the information I wanted to get to you today, but I do want to leave you with a story here. This is somebody I know. If she's listening, I'd love her to actually tell the story again through her own words if she wants to. Basically, and I'm not going to say who it is, this person, someone I used to talk to quite a bit, and then suddenly just kind of vanished, and I wasn't sure why, because we were good friends. And then I finally got a hold of this person and said, what's going on? Because I felt like something was wrong, and I was right. Basically, what happened is she was at a grocery store, coming out of the grocery store, and as she was putting her bags away in the car, and I may screw up some details here, but it all kind of works towards the end result of what I'm trying to get out here. He offers to help with the groceries, which she didn't need help, and then says, hey, I never do this, but you're really attractive. Can I get your number? Maybe we can go out sometime. She first said, nah, not really. I'm just getting some groceries. Got to head home. And he kept talking to her, and she kept saying that he was really charming. Not really her type, but he was super charming. So over time, he turned that no to yes, and she gave him her number. And before she even got home, if I remember correctly, she got a text from him saying, hey, let's meet up tonight. And she's like, it's going to be really late by the time I'm free. I got this thing over here I got to do, and it's going to be really late. And he's like, oh, that's no problem. I can make it work. How about we do blah, 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 go get some coffee. And again, just kept working that no and changed it to a yes. And so she met up with him just briefly, just going to go in, say hello, because he was going to, I think, leave the next day on vacation or something like that. He really wanted to see her before he went. And so they went and got coffee. And as soon as they sat down and started drinking coffee, that he's like, mind you, this is late at night, 9, 10 o'clock at night. He's like, you know, what's great this time of night is the beach. It's really private and nice out there. Let's go to the beach. And she said, let's just stick with the coffee, talk for a little bit, then I got to get home. So they talked for a little bit more, and he eventually turned that no to a yes, and they went to the beach. Luckily, in two separate cars. And as they got out, started walking towards the beach, again, it's late at night, not a lot of people around, actually nobody around. And they're walking through the walkway, heading towards the beach. He keeps getting a little bit closer to her, and she keeps stepping a little bit farther away. She wasn't too comfortable with that. And then eventually he puts his arm around her and pulls her in. And she's uncomfortable, but didn't want to upset him, so just went with it. And they go down to the beach, and they're talking on the beach, and he decides he wants to go in for a kiss. She kind of pushes back a little bit, and again, say no, this isn't what I want to do. And he forcefully goes in for a kiss this time, and thankfully, she bites him on the lip. It was just her first reaction. She didn't have any training in martial arts or what was going on with this stuff. She didn't know to look for some of these things, nor should you really have to, but unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And he threw her to the ground and started to move towards her, and thankfully, there was an older couple that they did not see that were sitting on the bench, and the guy got up and ran towards him and ran him off. And she got up, ran to her car, and she said she proceeded to just sit there for about 2 hours. She couldn't even dial the phone. She was so shocked and scared, and in that mindset of when the sympathetic nervous system hits, it really depletes you. That's when the adrenaline hits, and we'll talk about more in depth on what that is. But it's the body's way of defending itself, but it taxes the system, and it takes quite a bit of time for it to come back down and kind of get your bearings back. And she could not drive home, and she lived a good ways away, so she ended up finally a couple hours in being able to dial the phone and call for somebody to come pick her up and take her home. And she, from what I understand, did not leave her house for a couple weeks. She didn't want to go outside. It was frightening because she was such a nice, trusting person. Never thought anything would happen to her. And I wish more people were that way, could be that way, because she was super sweet, but you can't. You do have to kind of assume the worst of people at times when you don't know them. And she luckily got out of it without any harm, but physical harm. I have no doubt there's still times that pops back into her mind when she's walking out of the grocery store or whatever else it may be. So she was a little worried to tell me what happened, because she knew I would get upset and want to do something about it. And she didn't want to give me the number. But eventually she did. I promised her I wouldn't just go track the guy down, but I did want to get the number and try and get his name so that he couldn't keep doing this. And I would do it the proper way and go through the authorities if need be. So I had a friend that works at the courthouse that she tracked the number and tried to find out who it was, but unfortunately it was not a number that was usable anymore, and we tried calling it again and it was disconnected. Essentially it was a burner phone, and that's the most frustrating part of this is he's done this before, this was his thing, and he undoubtedly has done it again since then, because he knew to get and use a burner phone and how to turn a no to a yes. He was extremely manipulative, and people that are charming can be that way. Not everyone that's charming is a manipulative monster. He was. You can use charm in a very bad way, so you got to be careful when somebody's very charming. It can be used to manipulate somebody. So if you look through that story and think about those pre-incident indicators we talked about before, and you can start to piece these together, and that a handful of them came up. The obvious one is he turned every single no into a yes, and there's quite a few no's there. Another thing that I had asked her when she first told me this story, I said, did he have any groceries with him? And she didn't know why that was important at first, but then said no, and I said, who comes out of a grocery store without groceries? That's a very rare thing. It's not like the mall where you go and window shop. You go to a grocery store to get food and needed accessories. You don't really come out without anything. You know, occasionally I'll forget my wallet and have to come back out before I buy something, but that's extremely rare. And so there was the first big red flag. And the fact that he kept turning no's to yeses, there's another red flag. He tried to, if you remember at the start of the story, he wanted to help her with the groceries. She didn't need help with it. She's capable of putting the groceries in her bag, into the trunk. So there is loan sharking. So he kept working her over and manipulating her. And it's so easy to do. Even if you know what to look for, it can be still done. So you have to always be on the lookout and know what to look for and expect some of these things to pop up. That is really the only way you can avoid these scenarios. And even knowing these, as I've talked about before, doesn't mean you're bulletproof. It may still happen, but it gives you a much higher success rate to deal with this stuff. After I had done and talked about that scenario before in one of my classes. I was teaching another friend of mine, and it was maybe 1 or 2 months later. She called me up and said, "Oh my God, I got to tell you what happened. You know, I remembered what you said in class, and we talked about those pre-incident indicators, what to look for, and that grocery stores are one of those places that are fertile hunting grounds." And she said her and her daughter, who was like maybe 4 or 5 at the time, were just getting groceries. And she said normally she would never have even thought to look up or recognize this, but she started recognizing that this guy kept following her around the grocery store. Just almost every aisle he was there. Not necessarily next to her, but just always kind of floating. And that every now and then he would see her look in a direction, but not at her, but at her 5-year-old daughter. And she got upset, but she had gone through my course and thought through, what do I need to do? And she did exactly what I told her to do. One, start with a broken pattern. Don't keep going through the aisles the same way. Go back to the previous aisles that you were already in. If he keeps following you and popping up, he is definitely following you. If you never see him again, then you just happen to get there at the same time and shop in the same way, in the same order, same pattern. So she switched over, went back to a couple of the same aisles, and he was there every time. And so then she thought, what do I need to do next? And she did exactly, again, what I told her to do. Go to the checkout and talk to, or find really anybody, but go to the checkout, start going through your stuff, and be okay with having to come back another time to get the rest of your groceries, but start checking out. And as you're doing so, quietly tell the person, this person is following me. It's very clear. Can you call the authorities, and can I get an escort with my groceries out to my car? And they said, absolutely. And they did so. And she got the escort out. The guy did not follow her. She said that he quickly left and went a whole different direction after she started getting escorted to her vehicle. And he may have overheard that she had asked to call the authorities. They don't know. I don't know what happened to it, but they did give a description. Hopefully he was caught. But again, just recognizing these things ahead of time, you can stop these people. And don't feel that if you did get taken advantage of or injured or whatever it may be, that you need to forget about it, because it can hurt to think about these things. You will get PTSD. It could be off of something like that. It could be off an actual attack. You don't know for sure, but you have to be able to do what they call a debriefing. You have to talk about it to the right people and calling the authorities and telling them everything as soon as possible is crucial, because they will record it. They will know what to do. And if you wait too long, your brain has this way of protecting you from pain, and it will misremember things, and it will lighten things and saying, oh, maybe it wasn't really that bad. He probably really wasn't following me. I don't know why I'm even telling you this. So don't worry about it. Nothing happened. But if you call them and talk to them immediately, it won't be that way. You're going to say, this guy did this, he did that. Oh my God, he's going to do this to somebody else. Get them quick. That's the difference between even 8 hours, let alone what could happen a day or a week later. So as hard as it is going to be to notify the authorities about something, you have to do it immediately, no matter how bad the situation. Something we used to talk about in self-defense classes that we'd bring up is a lot of things, but when it comes to rape, you have to ask yourself now, before anything actually happens, before you even finish the podcast here, think, if somebody's going to try and rape me, what will I do? Will I let it happen with the hope that they don't physically kill me or do anything seriously, like harm-wise, and hope they just go away and deal with it afterwards? or am I the person that will not be able to deal with this afterwards? No matter what happens, I have to fight them off with everything I have, because I will not be able to survive after this, even if they don't physically hurt me. There's a reason why there's an unfortunate percentage of people that commit suicide after being raped. And it's because it's so damn hard to deal with. And you have to be able to think about these things ahead of time. As hard as it is, as frustrating as it is, and weird as it may seem, you have to think about it. What would you do in this situation? Before, during, after? And think to yourself, am I going to be the person that fights back or not? I can't tell you what the answer is to that. Everyone's different. Because if you do fight back, there is a chance that they're going to fight back harder, and you may lose your life in the process. And for some people, that's worth it, because they're going to lose their life afterwards anyway. So again, you have to think these things through. Think about the worst case scenario. It's a crappy thing to deal with, unfortunately, but it is something that we have to think about when it comes to protecting yourself, protecting your family, whatever it may be. You have to be prepared. And that's the whole point of the podcast, for one, but why I go through prevention and awareness and not just how to punch and kick. Every one of my self-defense seminars or women's self-defense seminars, we talk about these things. And it's difficult. And this is also why I tell most people that it's not for kids. I have done seminars for kids, but it's a very different seminar, because talking about this type of stuff is very difficult. So I make sure that the parents or people understand what's going to be involved with this prevention and awareness class. It is physical, but it's a lot of this discussion type stuff going on. It's that crucial, because you can avoid all the physical, and it's so hard to depend on the physical. You just never know what's going to happen. And we'll talk about that on another podcast. I want to wrap this one up with that story, and know that these people are fine. Everything worked out well. They've taken classes with me since then. They've learned some things, and it has not happened since. And if it has, they have not told me about it. I didn't know about it, but I'd like to think that they would come to me if something else had happened. And I don't believe anything did, because when it's happened, you really change your mindset about all of this stuff and realize that you need to get up and do something about it to prevent it from happening. So few do. And that's the problem when I do these self-defense seminars. I'll do one and have maybe three people show up, sometimes one or two or nobody. And even when I have someone that comes to me and say, hey, I've got this group, this mother's group or something like that, there's going to be at least 50 people. Can you fit that many? I say, yeah, absolutely. And like, are you sure? That's a lot of people. I'm like, it's not going to be 50. It's going to be 5 to 10. They're like, oh, no, we got like 100 people in the group. I know we can get 50 in there. I'm like, that'd be great, but it's going to be 5 to 10. And as the weeks go on, they'll call me up and go, okay, we're down to 30, but we got 30. I'm like, oh, that's great. It's going to be 5 to 10. I say it in my mind. I don't try and deter them, but I just say, okay, thank you. And then, of course, the week leading up, all right, we're down to like 15. Mm-hmm. There'll be 5 to 10 that will show up. And the day of, 5 to 10 will show up, and the rest will either not show up or call and say they can't make it. This happened, that happened. There's always an excuse. And what it always comes down to is a vast majority of the people that show up are the people that we talked about early on, the confrontational type, that they're the ones that are probably least likely to be attacked to begin with, because they do things like this. They show up to these self-defense seminars. The ones that found ways to get out of it are the most likely ones to be attacked, because there was something that kept them from doing it, and it's usually some sort of fear. And that's what holds them back, and it's also what's going to lead them to be the one that gets attacked, unfortunately. It goes back to that shy, fearful, passive mindset. So hopefully you got something from this. If you did, try and tell other people about the podcast. I will keep doing more like this. I will have, Brent will definitely be back. I'm going to try and get as many different martial arts instructors in town on here, get some call-ins. I have my phone working through this thing, so we can get some people calling in that don't live here, and maybe to some students every so often, make it a little more lighthearted than this one, and have some fun with it. But I do want to keep coming back to some of the more serious stuff so you can actually learn something from this. And please do tell people about the podcast and about specifically these types of podcasts, these episodes that they can learn from. I think it's important. So good luck to you. Hopefully nothing ever happens. And hopefully you've learned something and will continue to learn something. All right. Until next time.